This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now from The Athletic is Michael Sean Duggar. So, Michael, what was your overall thoughts on that crazy game on Thursday night?
My overall thought is that both sides of the ball needed to finish a game in that way. Like, the defense had done a good job in the past getting the offense the ball in the clutch situation. You know, they did it in Chicago, I believe. Definitely did it against the Chargers, you know, the Rams. So they've kind of been finishing games, but they really did like a complete version of it on Thursday, and the offense so badly, badly, badly needed that. It almost felt like a big, you know, a big-time hitter at baseball finally, you know, getting out of a funk. They needed to show these young dudes how to win. There's a lot of guys in this team who haven't won a ton of football games, you know, who are playing a lot of snaps, you know, every night. So that was my main thing. Like, okay, cool. Now a Trey Flowers knows how to close it out. Now, you know, a Chedrick, you know, even a Ed Dixon with his new quarterback, you know, like these, the linemen, like they know what it takes. Like I think that will go a long way with this team. I think the losses will too. Honestly, you learn from your mistakes and then you learn how to finish. You know, sometimes you lose to learn how to win.
Mm-hmm. But I thought that was huge, being able to come back like that. And what I thought was amazing in the second half, how well they did in you know, in with their coverage, because they were able to get a couple coverage sacks that you didn't expect coming against Aaron Rodgers.
Right, right. Like I asked Shaquille Griffin about the defense, about the defensive line, excuse me, after the game. And he was like, yeah, it was great. But look, I went to the sideline and said, I need some love too, man. We were covering tonight. And they were. I think they did a really good job on Aaron Rodgers in the second half. You know, Aaron Rodgers is going to do some Aaron Rodgers things like he did on that 57-yarder to Devontae Adams. But, you know, aside from that, that secondary really, really locked down. And, you know, as cheesy as Pete Carroll's, you know, can you win a game in the first quarter? Can you, you know, his rally cry at the end of games, as cheesy and as predictable as it is, like if you watch the All Access video from that game, you can see him doing it in the locker room. And you can see some of the veterans kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, no, you can't win it in the second quarter like they heard it before. But there's a lot of guys in there who were just hearing it, and now they can believe it. You know, you can get down 14-3 to Aaron Rodgers and be like, well, we're not going to lose the game in the first quarter. We're not going to lose the game in the second quarter. Like, that's as cheesy as it is. That's why you know, Pete, you know, has those sayings and that message that can get stale to veterans, but it's fresh to a handful of guys every year. And you could kind of see the benefits of it on Thursday night.
Oh, no question. And I thought that was I thought he did a really good coaching job. And I thought the big thing is, you're right, they just didn't panic because they started out as bad as they can start, down 14-3, opening fumble by Chris Carson, giving up big plays. And it looked like this thing was going to be a blowout. And yet they started to come back and methodically do it. What's your thoughts as far as the philosophy of running the football old school wise like they are?
I mean, I don't think it's a sustainable model for success in today's game. And I mean, you think about it, look at their record now. They're the number one rushing team in the league just by, you know, raw counting stats, which can be useful for the game text. But for the most part, that means you're really good at running the ball. That's probably the best thing that you do, right? And they're 5-5. You know, that there's a lot of other factors in that, but I think, you know, if I was Pete Carroll, or maybe I was maybe a little bit more open-minded version of Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer, I would look at that. Like, okay, cool, yeah, we're playing really well right now, but look at what we're best at, grounding and pounding, and we're 500. Now look at the other teams in the league who are doing it differently, who are not 500. You know, look at what the Panthers' offense is doing and how they're mixing things up, getting creative, and playing to Cam Newton's strengths without having him take 20 hits a night. Look at what New Orleans is doing with a quarterback like Drew Brees. Look what the Packers were doing with Aaron Jones, really, in that first half. Look at what the Rams are doing. Look at what the Chiefs are doing. You know, even to an extent, look at what how the Patriots get down. You can look at other teams in the league and see, yeah, being able to run the ball is better than not being able to run the ball. But if you live and die on it, you know, you get behind in a game, and being able to rally and bring yourself back is going to be tougher. And they learned that in the first few games, you would think. I think some of those games where they were down two possessions and were able to cut it to one was a little bit of like fool's gold, a little misleading. You know, like they were out of that Bears game, right? The final score ended up being one possession, but they were out of it the whole game. Same thing with the Chargers for a lot of that game. Yeah, they ended up being a one score loss, but they were getting beat up, you know, offensively throughout that entire game. You know, so when I think about the philosophy, I think that, you know, it's predicated on being in a close game and playing the lead. And in this league where things can just happen and you're playing a lot of young dudes, I don't think you can afford to have that be your offensive philosophy. And that's why you're seeing, you know, a lot of frustration with the offense, even in games last night where I thought it played all right.
Yeah, but my big thing is that I still look at this. It's only an 8-game offense right now where they're still trying to learn on the execution. Russell's trying to adjust to some new receiving help and some new skilled position guys. And, you know, they're still trying to find their way. They found their philosophy, which I think is important. And you see the philosophy is good enough to score between 24 and 30 points a game. That's effective. But it also coincides with going up against, a stretch of quarterbacks than two teams that are better than them. And so now I think that they can get maybe a little bit, not more creative now that schedule to a degree lightens up in the sense that they're going to have 4 home games. I think they match up pretty well against Carolina. And then, of course, they have the 3 games in the division that are still left that are all winnable.
Yeah, I think the schedule looks all right for them to possibly get in the playoffs. The Carolina game is really a decider. Carolina and Minnesota.
Yeah.
Right, like you gotta beat Minnesota, and it would help if you also, you know, beat Carolina to make your December a little easier. Now, I mean, when I'm critical of the philosophy, that doesn't mean that they can't win games, right? They have a really good secondary, and they have a really, really good run game, and, you know, and their defense isn't giving up a ton of points unless they're playing the Rams. So, like, you can win games that way, but like you mentioned, it's an old school way of thinking about it. Like, it's the old school idea of, like, let's pound it down the defense's throat with wounds at them, right? Power, physical, nasty, all that, and, you know, the quote unquote wear the defense down, right? As if throwing the ball doesn't. You know, throwing the ball wears pass rushers down. Throwing the ball wears out their DBs. You know, throwing the ball wears out their linebackers. You know what wears down a defense? Being on the field and scoring points, right? No matter how you do it. That's what I mean. It's that subtle just difference. It's a kind of an archaic way of thinking that you need to, like, deliver these body blows to set up your, you know, your knockout. I mean, no, if you're efficient, come out and knock them out, right? Then you don't need to wear them down because they're knocked down. You know, that's a little different philosophy. And you can see that's kind of what the Chiefs are doing. Like, we don't need to just pound Kareem Hunt, right? We got Patrick Mahomes, and he'll just sling it, and we'll be up 20, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
you know, look how the Rams against New Orleans, they didn't feel like they were out of that game, right? Because
right.
They were built to be able to get pass happy if need be, and Seattle is not.
But my big thing is that, where I look at it is that this is a turnaround team, you know, reset, whatever you want to call it, and, you know, they aren't as good. I mean, they're not a Super Bowl team. I never thought they were. I thought they were a 9-win team that if things go right, they can win 10. And I think, you know, you are what you are. And that's what I think they are. And let's see if they can prove that because I think that, you can't do what I right now I don't think they're prone to be able to do. They're not going to be a high scoring. I mean, they're not going to be a creative type of offense. They don't have that ability right now. Maybe next year as they add to things, they can do it.
See, and I think they have the offensive weapons to really do it. I mean, look at it this way. They got a guy like David Moore who you can give the ball to, right, in some space. You know, they got Tyler Lockett who's the same way. They got Doug who's, you know, a dynamic receiver from all over the field, right? You got 3 running backs. Right? That's what? 6 guys you trust to really dominate a game,
mm-hmm.
right? You look at that, like, compared to the Rams offensively. Rams out here running 4 dudes, right? Kupp, Rutt, Woods, Cooks, Gurley. You know, a tight end here and there, and they score 30. Right? It's not complicated. They're not too fancy. It's just who are our playmakers? What's the best way to get our playmakers the ball playing to our quarterback's strengths? You know, like, and the Seahawks have more offensive weapons than them, especially now that the Rams lost Cooper Kupp, I believe, for the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at it that way, there are weapons on this Seattle team. It's just a matter of, like you said, getting creative and figuring out a way to get them all involved. And I think that's on Schottenheimer. And then, you know, you look at his philosophy of, you know, getting to a certain number of rushing attempts. You know, Pete said getting in the teams is how you get a guy going. He'd like to get all his guys in the teams. Like, running the ball down people's throat 45 times, yeah, that's cool. Then you're down 2 scores, and like, all right, we can't do that. So I think some of these games have exposed the flaw in that philosophy. And like you said, that's going to cap, you know, their win total at the end of the day.
Right, but I thought their win total was going to be capped anyways, because they didn't have enough, I think, to be able to get the 13-12 wins. And that's why when you see them play a team like the Chargers or a team like the Rams, I mean, those two teams are better. And they played them pretty well, and I think they can learn from it. And also, I mean, when you have so many changes, it just takes time to learn how to win. And I think that was a big step last Thursday in being able to get the Packers and then learn how to win that game.
Yeah, and I think the secondary is really learning on the fly, like getting tested. You know, you'll see early a Trey Flowers get beat, or at some point, you know, a Shaquille get beat, and then you'll see like, okay, cool, Trey's figured it out now. Or like, all right, we're going to see Shaq bounce back. You know, I asked Pete Carroll specifically about how he kind of gets a feel for defensive backs, short-term memory, because that's what they got to have if they're getting beat. And you can just tell that, you know, Trey and Shaquille, you know, those guys have, even Bradley, you know, they have a feel for it. And they've been getting tested. These receivers they're playing are good. I know Detroit kind of just tanked their season after losing to Seattle, which is weird. But they have good receivers, or at least they had good receivers. You know, the Chargers clearly have very talented receivers. You know, the Packers only had one, basically, but he was really, 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 really good. You know, and then the Carolina's offense is going to present the same issues, and Minnesota's going to present the same issues, you know. So the test that they got and how they've handled them, you know, outside of the Rams, I think that's really encouraging for the secondary, and that's going to be really big in December.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that. So that's going to be the challenge. What was your thoughts on Rashad Penny? Because people were ready to run him out of town about 3 weeks ago.
And I've been saying it's so frustrating from Rashad's point of view, in that, like, he's trying to figure it out. And meanwhile, there's a seventh-round pick who's better than him and a guy that got claimed off waivers who was playing better than him. So comparatively, you know, it just was really, really, really bad situation for him. But to his credit, he's kind of figured it out. You know, he's one of those guys that when he got on the field now, he's like, all right, cool. We need to keep him on the field. He deserves that. And I think you watch the film of his 30-yard line. He wasn't, you know, I don't want to say this about an NFL player, but you don't think he's that fast. And, like, you look at him, and then, you know, he makes these little subtle cuts. His strides aren't that wide. So when he just shifts, it's real subtle. Like, you look how I think he dodged Clay Matthews in the backfield. He didn't do much. He just kind of, a slight just stutter to his left, just a little shift. I mean, he's gone. And that straight line speed is really impressive. And, you know, none of the backs have really broken a home run. You know, Rashad has had a couple big ones now, but with that straight line speed I've seen from Penny a couple times, I think he's got a chance to be super duper explosive, you know, just burning guys down the field.
No doubt. Hey, so what do you have on The Athletic and what other stuff?
I'm going to plug a series that I wasn't involved in, but I thought that was a really cool idea. It was the worst game ever. Like, we had everyone write about the team they cover's worst game ever. So we did I think someone did a Mariners. I know we did a Wazoo. I know we did Huskies. Jason Jenks had a really good Seahawks one up there. Jason has a really good Gardner Minshew piece of Wazoo quarterback up there. We've been turning out some good stuff, man. It was a dang, another Jason one about the D-line coach, Clint, flipping a projector at halftime because his D-line wasn't playing well. And obviously I always have my, you know, daily coverage, and I got a special story coming out. It should come out Monday or Tuesday while they've got a few days off. So we're working. We appreciate everyone for subscribing. And we got a new Seahawks Man-to-Man podcast up right now on VSporto. Always on my Twitter as well, just pinned to the top. You guys can't find it, at Mike Dugar.
That sounds good. Hey, Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Don.
Michael Sean Dugar, of course, on The Athletic. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Steve. Hey, Steve, how are you?
Hey, good morning. Just a quick question for you, John, about the Packers simulating the snap count. And I was Googling about that a little bit and just looking at the history of how that kind of issue has come up over the years as the umpires have moved around the field. It's kind of mm-hmm. gotten better or worse over the years. I'm just curious, what is the actual written rule and how do they know, you know, when it's actually, you know, encroaching on, you know, the spirit of fair competition versus just, you know, the defenders communicating normally. It just seems like an awfully subjective thing.
Yeah, I think DJ Fluker said it the best. DJ said that, you know, he knows, particularly in a loud place like Seattle, that the officials may not be able to hear it. And so that's why they tend to get away with it. And that's why you've got to try to warn the referee. It's like, hey, this is happening. And then see that it was happening and they can make him stop. And so, because again, I think I was pretty sure that they did the same thing at the end of the Charger game. They got that one false start that took it from the 1 to the 6 yard line. And so, you know, that's just one of the things that, yeah. And again, sometimes you can see the head moves and stuff like that. But if the officials aren't warned about it, then they can't find out and kind of watch it. And of course, now I think that Pete Carroll is going to make sure that they watch it so it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, thanks. I'm curious, do you know how it's actually written in terms of the rule? Like, how do they know, you know, what is cheating versus what is just communicating as usual?
Yeah, I don't know which part of the rule book. I hadn't had a chance to really look at it, but it's pretty well written in there. Again, the rule book is way too long as it is, and so to try to dig into it and see, but I'm sure you can probably Google search and see if you can identify that. I'll probably try to do that this afternoon once I get out to the airport when I head down to L.A. Hey, Steve, thank you for the phone call.
Thank you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to James in Renton. Hey, James.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Pepper? How are you?
I'm doing great. I have a couple rebuttals for the guy that thinks we need to throw the ball all the time. And I just have to say, you know, if you do go look up any stats of Andy Reid's offense or any of those air raid offenses, they usually stall in the playoffs whenever defenses get really tough. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the type of quarterback and playing to the strengths that we have, you know, that read option is very, very, very crucial in making sure that defensive ends aren't screaming up the field. I'm really, really, really happy the way they've really worked that back in. And I think that, you know, it gives Russell a different type of launching point when it comes to where he sets up from the pocket. I really, really believe that, you know, the Pete Carroll, USC, you know, break your back, running the football type of way. In the end, that's what really works in the playoffs. And if you look at Tom Brady and any time they've went to the air raid when they were working with Randy Moss or when they were working with, you know, Stallworth and those guys, he's never won a championship like that. And the way they won championships was running the football, playing balanced football. And, you know, if you think you're going to keep up with these air raid offenses with the type of skill position players we have, no disrespect to them, but we don't have a guy on the outside on the Y that can win one-on-one and just throw the ball up to in a way. I know Moore's nice, and I like what we have, but, you know, we don't have a Sanu or a 6'3 guy that, like, just can go out there and just bulldog people. And so I really think with what they got, you know, and Pete, we trust. And, like, but like I said before, we've won championships like this. I don't remember Andy Reid winning a championship. I don't remember McAvoy. And I love those guys. And I think Sean Payton's a good guy. But remember when Sean Payton and those guys won the championship, they were running the ball with Reggie Bush and those guys. And so when Drew's dropped back and thrown it 40 times, they never went to the Super Bowl. But when they were running the football and playing balanced football is when Drew looked really well. So I think of going to the, you know, to trying to change your philosophy, that's not something that Pete does. And there's nothing that shows that that's a proven concept when it comes to consistently winning, especially with defenses, that the quickest way to get your defense tired is to throw three and out, throw the ball, no time off the clock, and then here you go, back defense on the field again. So we saw how that worked for Chip Kelly. I think that these gimmicky offenses will, you know, people will figure them out, but running the football is something that when you start breaking people's backs, there's nothing you can really do about it. And then that play action happens, and then your skill position looks a lot better. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, and see, this is where I agree with you, is that I think people, you know, you're trying to copy what the league is doing, and yeah, you can try to catch up to that, but that's not the personnel this team has, because say what you want, I mean, DJ Fluker has been an amazing addition to the team, same thing with J.R. Sweezy, but one of the weaknesses for DJ is that he's not the greatest pass blocker, but the way that they're running the football is allowing at least more of a level pocket for Russell Wilson, so he can work the play action passes. I mean, it's like, you know, I think Mike Zimmer was joking about that this week, but he says that Matt Nagy has an 800 playbook. Okay, well, this team, you can't have all these plays. I mean, you've got to just take the base and work it. Because, again, this is still – I mean, this is not a 2 to 3 year project. And I know the Bears have done this in 1 year with Matt Nagy, but they have different personnel because they have, you know, a little bit more, you know, smaller running back and Tarik Cohen's and all that. But overall, just concentrate on what this is, which is a running football team. It, when needed, it can pass the football. And remember, they were doing this when Doug Baldwin was playing hurt. Now he's starting to get a little bit better. I mean, he's only been pain-free since a week ago Thursday. So I think you just got to be patient with it. But regardless, it's still working. Yeah, you can say 5-5, but of course, the 5-5 was messed they in the first two games that they lost, because now you can see those were winnable games, but they weren't ready yet. And then you put Fluker in, and you put Sweezy in, and you run the football. They're 5-3 after that. You just stay with that. Load up the phone lines, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rashid in Bothell. Hey, Rashid, how are you?
I'm fine, Professor. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well.
Hey, Professor, before I ask my questions, I want to give a shout-out to Graz for his health. And, like,
yes,
we want him back on the air as soon as possible. I love Graz, and wish him the best.
Okay, and, of course, we all love Graz. And, yeah, get healthy, Graz. That's the key.
Yes, exactly. And, Professor, I wanted to ask you, should we start a petition or something? We have to get Mike Solari, the assistant coach of the year. I mean, like, I don't even think there's anybody close in this league.
Well, no, in fact, I'll tell you one that may top him.
Which one?
Norv Turner next week for Carolina. Look what he's done with Cam Newton. I mean, completing 67% of his passes when he's been below 60 most of his career. I mean, that's the one that could top him. And I guess you could say maybe the winner of that game could be the winner of the assistant coach of the year. But there's no question. I think that he definitely does deserve something.
Oh, my God. Because, I mean, we were in shambles, and what he's doing. And there's some videos online. I would encourage your listeners to go and check out some of these videos and stuff. Of like, and especially Brian Baldinger did it one after the Detroit game, and you can see like the carnage that our O line is doling out to the defensive lines across the league and stuff. But by
the way, Rashid, I'm glad you brought that up because right the day after, I think the day after he posted that, we had Baldinger on the air.
Oh, okay.
And he was talking about how he marveled, and of course he got animated about how excited he was watching the carnage what they were doing on the offensive line.
I mean, that is amazing. If you just hear like the joy in his voice in that video, and that is just amazing and stuff. Professor, these coaching changes that are on the horizon, any chance? I was thinking like maybe like one thing that people are talking about. If Jim Harbaugh leaves Michigan, do you think he'll be a good fit in Green Bay if they let McCarthy go?
No, I think he would be going over to Miami, because I think Stephen Ross, who's a big Michigan guy, remember he tried to get him a couple years ago and he screwed up and let him go to San Francisco. Now I think he would come with everything to try to do it. But I don't know. Harbaugh's still sitting in a spot to be in the championship. I mean, in the top
yeah.
four. Do you think he is? I mean, I know that 4 years is usually as long as everybody can take of him at one place. So this would be the time that he probably would be driving everybody crazy. But I haven't really heard too many rumblings. I mean, for Jim Harbaugh, John Harbaugh, I think that could be a possibility in Miami too, just because he knows Jim.
Yeah, and Mike McCarthy, I think like he'll be a great fit in. I mean, he's a good coach, but I think his time has run out because. I was a professor. There's one stat that really bothered me. Aaron Rodgers, as talented as he is, and he is the most talented player in the league, there's no doubt about it, but his road record is 4 under .500, and Russell Wilson is 1 over .500, and Tom Brady is like 31 over .500. So there's something to be said, and I think there's a clear disconnect, and I think Aaron Rodgers can use another coach, and Mike McCarthy, I think, at the Browns with all those Green Bay people there, I think he'll be a great fit, and they'll both do well with a change of scenery. What say you, sir?
Yeah, I know Mike too well, and he's a friend and all that stuff. But I think he's going to end up in Cleveland. Now he'll have 3 to 4 offers because everybody wants an offensive play caller that can do a good job, and I think he can definitely do that. But I think what you can look at is that he's gone there, but he'll have plenty of offers. I don't know what Green Bay's going to do because again, whoever it's going to be, it's got to be an offensive coach, and so maybe it's going to be John DeFilippo or Matt LaFleur. Those I think will be two of the main candidates. I can't see it being Joshy Boy McDaniels. Don't see that being the way it would go. But I think it's almost a given right now that Mike's going to be out in Green Bay.
And he's from your part,
yes.
Neck of the woods, right?
That is correct. That's why, and I've known him, and I know that there was a couple little things that I actually he doesn't know about that I actually helped him on, and he's always helped me through the years. So no, he's a good coach. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to spend any time with him at the game on Thursday, but I know because I thought he was concentrating on just trying to get the win and how disappointed he was. But good coach, he'll land very quickly once he's fired.
And, Professor, just one last thing. You know, in 2012 and in the Chicago in the fourth quarter, when Russell Wilson turned it on, like made two game-winning drives and stuff, mm-hmm. I know we're still comparing it to 2012. I don't know if it's the same team and, like, same personnel, but that was a turning point for that season, and that elevated us to, like, winning a Super Bowl the next year and stuff. This fourth quarter, like, there was nothing going well for Seattle, and then, like, all of a sudden, just Russell Wilson just turned it on and everything, and I'm hoping he keeps comparing this team to the 2012, and I think if we do end up in the playoffs, I think we're going to look back at this fourth quarter and his play, and I thought he was sensational, so
right.
People who keep criticizing him, I don't understand. He's really good, and we will be, you say it's a 4-win team. I think without him, we might even not be like a 3-win team, you know?
Yeah,
so.
No, he's that valuable. I mean, because he is able to keep you in the games, and then when needed, he can win you the games. That's why
he's
so
three
good.
Games in his career, three games that he's lost for more than 10 points
mm-hmm.
and stuff. So, like, it's just like it doesn't even happen to Tom Brady. So. But, Professor, you have a great day, and thanks for taking my call, sir.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, John. How's
good
it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Just glad that we won last Thursday. And this was just a question that's been bothering me for the last three games. Where are the turnovers? It just seems... Is it just bad technique?
No, the quarterbacks
are secondary.
No, it's just the quarterbacks are playing. I mean, because when you're Aaron, think about this. It's like how you can't get to Phillip Rivers, you can't get to Jared Goff. So you're not going to get many turnovers unless you get a forced fumble on a sack. And if you're not going to get the sacks, you're not going to get that. Okay. Then you look at Aaron Rodgers. He's had one interception this year. They've just played three teams, two of them that are better than them, that you're just not going to get to the quarterback. Although, remember, they did get to the quarterback. They just didn't get the turnovers. But again, the turnovers aren't going to be there against those three quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And
yeah.
So now, coming up in this next stretch, that's where you see the turnovers come back. That's why, and I think that this team probably learned from this, is that they can't lose the turnover battle, particularly when you know you're not going to get any and you can't have one. Think about how the different outcome would it have been had Russell Wilson not thrown the pick six against the Chargers or had that fumble deep in Seahawk territory in the game against the the Ram game. they had a better chance to win it because now he has to overcome two scores as opposed to one. And so he can overcome the one. It's just tougher on the two. And even against the Rams, he was at the 1 yard line.
Yeah. And what is simulating the count mean? Does that mean the defense mock what the quarterback does in the offensive line?
Yeah, kind of yelling, hut, 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 varying the voice and then trying to get the offensive lineman to jump.
And is that... And is there a rule that the defense can't do that?
Yes. Definite rule on that, and that's one that it has to be enforced because it just causes problems.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, John. Have a good
day. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet. Jet, how are you?
Well, John, I think it's now time for the Requiem for Todd Bowles.
Yes, agreed.
I don't think even you, his greatest defender, can support what the Jets have been putting out there this last month.
No, it's kind of like, and I know I wrote about this the other day, that and I might be missing one with Steve Wilks. I kind of kept him out because I still can't imagine firing a coach after 1 year and you're not the Cleveland Browns. But, yeah, I think that it's pretty evident he's starting to lose this team because he's sitting there with a 3-7 record. At least you know he's not going to lose this week because it's a bye week. But it looks bad. It looks really bad.
Well, it's not the record. It's not just losing. But you've seen the product that they put out there. And, well, last week was just uncalled for, completely uncalled for. That team was not ready to play emotionally, physically, mentally, scheme-wise. They were not ready to go, and there's just no excuse for that. That was honestly a must-win game, but that was a game that they really, really needed, or should I say Todd Bowles really, really needed. And they not just laid an egg, I mean, they just dropped a bomb. It was just pathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a constant digression. And I understand there's a dearth of talent, particularly in certain spots. I get that. Everybody gets that. Nobody has a problem understanding that. The problem is, and this is the same thing we've had throughout the entire Todd Bowles era, okay? These coaching staff cannot seem to make adjustments at halftime. They cannot seem to scheme in the beginning of the game. I mean, they're constantly playing from behind. All right? You can't do that with a lack of talent. It just doesn't work. And the reason they're playing from behind is because they're not prepared and they're too predictable. I mean, my God, you know what they're going to do on first down on defense every flipping time. All you got to do, and you know, blitzes don't work if they know it's coming. All you got to do is watch Jamal Adams and know where the blitz is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And on offense, my God, you know, everything is packed in from 20 yards in. You know, and if you're going to have a running game that's based on zone blocking, you need space. You need separation. And they're not getting it. And you talk about, you know, Fulari being one of the greatest pickups for the Seahawks this year. You know, Rich Dennison was this great, you know, defense offensive line guru. You know, well, the offensive line has been pathetic. And either they don't have the talent to match the scheme. They're not matching the scheme to match the talent. But whatever the problem is, this line is not as bad as they've been playing. No offensive line in professional football is as bad as they've been playing.
No, they have been absolutely awful. I agree with that. It's sad to see, too. I mean, it's bad.
And I don't know what the problem is. I don't think there's just one specific problem. But, you know, again, this is the fourth iteration of their defensive backfield. And, of course, we have, you know, Todd Bowles, the great defensive backs player and coach. And it doesn't matter if you had veterans like we did a few years ago with Cromartie and Revis and Gilchrist, and they couldn't get out and screen, and they couldn't get on the same page and play together and communicate. And we've got similar problems here. You know, actually, the defensive backfield has not been playing all that poorly. Claypool's been playing pretty well, but cheapers. You know, I mean, this is the fourth year in a row that we have had the same problems over and over and over with different sets of personnel. And there's just no excuse for it at this point.
No, I agree. I mean, it's you can see changes coming, and now the only question is going to be how extensive do they do it? I mean, a lot of the problem still has to be some of the bad drafting that the general manager has done. That hasn't helped. Certainly trying to go with a young quarterback, that hasn't helped. But no, this is really tough and one that I think you have to be really afraid of.
Yeah, and what I hope is it just doesn't carry over. But what I hate to see is we're going to have yet another offensive coordinator coming in next year.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine Bates and Dennison are going to survive.
No. Well, in fact, I thought what was weird is that, you know, now even I think this week Bates was admitting that he's not doing very well.
Well, geez, I'm glad he's at least honest.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure that one out. And they just keep packing it in. I mean, in the beginning, they were spreading them out. They were running the crossing routes. You know, people were getting some separation. They were getting open. That hasn't happened in like 3-4 weeks. Everything is just packed in tight. And I don't know what the problem is. And it's just very frustrating. But I'm tired of talking about Todd Bowles. What I'm more concerned about is what's the problem with the offensive line? Is that a question?
There's not that good. There's no talent.
Well, I understand there's not the greatest amount of talent. But, I mean, like you said, you bring in Solari, okay, and good things start to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you bring in Bill Callahan, good things happen for the Jets. You bring back Dante Skarnecki, you know, all of a sudden bums become stars. You know, I don't understand. This offensive line wasn't this bad last year, and all you have is a better center than you did last year. So I don't get it. I don't understand where that problem lies.
Well, obviously it has to lie with the coaching, but I think a lot of it has to lie with the talent. Hey, Jet, thank you for the phone call.
Send the Prozac, John.
You need it. I know it. Hey, let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton.
Why are they wearing these ugly uniforms?
Well, hey, hang on 1 second. Give me 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I feel Jet's pain, Mr. Clayton. Mm-hmm. I do. I understand it. You know, some of the darkest times of my life as a fan was when Lou Holtz retired and we went through the cycle of the three most miserable coaches in the world. And that was, of course, Tyrell Willingham and Charlie Weiss, and I won't even say the other guy's name, but it was terrible, absolutely terrible. But so just hang in there, Jet. Believe in your team. Things will get better. Maybe not right
Maybe
away.
Maybe not now, yeah.
Turn them off for a while. Let them go for a while. All right, Mr. Clayton.
Yes.
It's because it's a special event. It's kind of like you don't go to a formal without wearing a tux, and they went to Yankee Stadium, and they're part of this recruiting plan and program that the Irish have. So in a tribute to the Yankees, they styled this uniform, which is a PR. Got everybody talking about it. That's all you want. You got all the high school kids are going to say, hey, what are they talking about, these Yankee-looking football uniforms that Notre Dame's wearing at Yankee Stadium against Syracuse today? And they're going to look. And you know what? Older people may poo-poo it, but the young kids probably think, hey, that's pretty cool. Notre Dame is kind of hip, aren't they? So that's why, Mr. Clayton.
Yeah, I don't like it.
All right, see?
Yeah.
You're just an older, I can't say fan. I keep trying to convince you.
No, you can't say that.
I know you don't like it, but, hey, they're there to promote the university and the football program, and that's why they play this thing. It's a giant recruiting tool, Mr. Clayton. But we're wasting so much time on that. We can talk about that next week.
Yeah.
Syracuse today. You know what? The game's on at 11:30.
Okay.
You'll be able to watch
a
little bit of it today.
Can't. I'm on a plane.
What time?
I will be leaving at 1:53.
So you're literally running out the door, aren't you?
That's correct.
Well, just as you close the show, just turn that channel for 1 minute and watch, because it'll be on.
Okay.
But, Mr. Clayton, I'm worried about this game. This is a tough, tough opponent, this Syracuse group.
Right.
You know, they've got quite the offense. But Mr. Clayton, they have no defense.
Mm-hmm.
And in college football, defense wins championships. Unbelievable. You know, they're 107th in the NCAA with pass defense. 107th.
Okay.
And they are 70th against the run. Now, when I've got my team has Book, who leads the nation in passing percentage with almost 75% completions, that doesn't, you know, That doesn't factor in the drops that kids have made, that kind of stuff. He's only had 4 interceptions in 6 games that he's played. He hasn't played any, really.
Yeah, because, I mean, they just keep benching quarterbacks.
He's a Montana kind of looking guy with his passing attack. And he's just as efficient as Montana was at Notre Dame. He might be a little better, Mr. Clayton.
Different era. Let's put it this way. I'm not going to put him in the Hall of Fame. Hey, got to run.
Hey, have a great day. Go ahead.
866-979. Those uniforms look terrible. Let's go to Mike in Snohomish. Or Snohomish. Hey, Mike.
How are you going to follow up? Thanks, Professor. Big Seahawk fan. Love what they're doing. I may have my blue and green glasses on, but I don't see a team that could just as easily be 7-3 or 8-2.
Yeah.
And I've come across an interesting statistic, and maybe you could have your stat people check it out. If the Seahawks get 33 designed rushes, that doesn't count a Russell Wilson scramble for his life kind of thing, but 33 designed either quarterback, quarterback draw or touches by the running backs, 33 is the number. At 33, they win the game if they don't lose the turnover ratio.
Right. And see, I'll add to that. It's again, this is Brian Schottenheimer. This used to be known when Brian Billick was the coach in Baltimore as the theory of 49. Now it's the theory of 53. But if you can have 53 rushing attempts and completions, you usually are a pretty good offense, and you're usually going to win the game.
Yeah, in fact, in the completion, I'm just looking at the rushing attempts. So we had 32 against the Rams the first time. Our 33rd and probably game-winning rushing attempt was thwarted by a holding penalty, followed up by a motion penalty. You guys remember the a false start penalty took us out of field goal range. Against the Chargers, we were at the 1 yard line after the pass interference, and we get another false start penalty that takes the ball out of the running back's hands. Both of those games were winnable with conceivably one more rush. Certainly the Ram game, the first Ram game, we were in position to win that game with a field goal. But it's an interesting thing to watch the rest of the season. If the Seahawks get 33 rushes, I don't even care about yardage. They get 33
rushes. No, that's it. I mean, because it's the number of attempts. And I mean, you noticed the Ram game, the possession time was like 35 to 25, and it was almost the same thing against the Packers.
Crazy time of possession, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Good way to keep those other guys off the good way to control the Goss and the Rodgers of the world was to let them be watching the game from the sidelines, right?
Right, exactly, 100%. Hey, great call.
Okay.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, we'll check in with Jessamyn McIntyre, get a preview of tonight's game coming up for the Cougars. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.